If it pleases the court, my name is James J. Peters. My attorney registration is 15195. I represent the appellants in this matter, Chanson Roque and Shannon Eisenhower, and I appreciate if you'd let me know when I'm 10 minutes in so I can reserve 5 minutes, Your Honor. Essentially, this case arises out of a road rage incident. The drunken tortfeasor follows my clients into the McDonald's parking lot, parks his car behind him so they cannot leave even if they wanted to leave. Gets out and assaults him with a, they get out of the cars and the drunk assaults him with a golf club. Pulls it out of his trunk. The vehicles were not moving at the time of this incident. And so the issue arises whether or not this originated, grew out of, or flowed from the use of an automobile. My contention is that it did. I mean, but for the parties driving down the roadway and flipping each other off and cursing at each other and doing something like that, this would not have occurred. This incident did not occur in a vacuum. The Supreme Court has held that physical assaults don't necessarily have to be, or the use and operation of a motor vehicle doesn't have to be the direct cause of a physical assault, as long as there's a nexus between the use of the automobile and the physical assault, and that if there's a significant event occurs with the operation of the vehicle. Well, we have that significant event occurring here. It's the road rage incident. It ties it in. The assault did not occur in a vacuum, and there was no cooling off period. He follows him immediately into the McDowell's parking lot, immediately grabs his golf club out and assaults him. This case is like the Court of Appeals case, which I cited in my briefs, the Cole case.
Mr. Peters, but why doesn't the fact that the assaulting party, the assaulter, gets out of the car, exits the car, goes to the trunk, opens the trunk, gets what he wants, closes the trunk. Why doesn't that chain of events cut off?
Well, as I said before, it flowed. It grew out and flowed. It happened almost simultaneously. There was no cooling off period in this, and that's a distinction from other cases, from another assault case. They didn't walk into the bar. There was no cooling off period. The guy didn't come back 2 days later and say, you know, I'm really upset with you, I'm going to assault you. That would be a different thing. This came out of, and his actions arose because of the parties were driving down the middle of the road, having this heated exchange between the parties. And that's the distinction, and that's why it does flow and grow out of the road rage incident, which in and of itself it contains the necessary operations of the motor vehicles.
What does the Kastner case do?
Well, the Kastner case does not affect us. It doesn't even mention the fact pattern of the Cole case. What Kastner says is that you have to take a look at each fact pattern in each individual case to see if it originated, grew, or flew out. In Kastner, it was just the vehicle was used to transport the victim to the scene of a rape, okay, to the scene of the sexual assault. The only thing that the vehicle was used in there was the situs of the rape and the physical assault. But that's a little bit different than what we have here, because here it wasn't like the two parties came into the McDonald's parking lot, never having had any contact with each other, got out of their cars, and one guy came over with a golf club and assaulted them, or they met in the McDonald's, and then they sat at a heated argument, and then the assault occurred. That would be a totally significant, independent, significant event. In this instance, again, we have more than what they had in Kastner, because the parties were actually operating their vehicles when the impetus for the assault occurred. That they were operating and driving down the roadway. They did not just meet, get out of their cars, and then the confrontation occurred. Confrontation occurred while they were operating the motor vehicles driving down the roadway.
Is recognizing this was a summary judgment, so you don't have a fully developed record, is there any evidence in the record that your clients would have fled but for him pulling his car up behind them? Because it seems to me that, you know, essentially they're in a public place. If they wanted to walk away, they could have, whether he parked behind them or not. But is that...
They were parked in. They couldn't have left. They couldn't have left the scene of the incident.
Why couldn't they just walked away or walked into the McDonald's?
Well, they walked out of... The assault occurred right after they walked out of their cars. In fact, Shannon Eisenhower was still in the car when Shannon... car when Chance and Roca was assaulted, and then Shannon Eisenhower got out of her car, and she was assaulted with a guy's golf club as well.
Okay, I mean, in their affidavits, did they specifically say...
In their depositions.
That they would have fled but for the...
No, and I will say that. There was nothing that said they would have fled
but for the...
Okay. There's nothing, there's no testimony they say, but for their being parked in. But
okay.
But it goes without saying, they couldn't have fled, even if they'd wanted to, and it suggests that they were just going to walk into McDonald's and not attempt to leave. It's just speculation on the part of anybody.
Okay, thank you.
The other issue is, there's an issue preclusion of race judicata case because there's a federal court of appeals decision. Counsel raised that in his brief, even though the trial judge did not address that issue. And I think the issue in the federal court case, and that was a declaratory judgment action saying that there was no third-party coverage in that case. This case is not different. This is a first-party coverage case. And Colorado law is well-developed that in a third-party case where you're suing against the perpetrator, that'll uphold the insurance policy provisions excluding intentional and criminal acts. However, in the context of a UN case, first party cases which we have here, they won't uphold that. That will not be upheld. And those provisions, and they conflict with Colorado's uninsured motorist statute. And under the Colorado uninsured motorist statute, which is what we have here and what the underlying cases here, they will not uphold those exclusions. So the federal district court case, the federal district court judge made the appropriate decision in the context of a third party claim, but he was not addressing it in a first, he was not addressing that issue in the context of a first party claim. So that's the distinction, that's the difference. Right here we're dealing with first party claim where the appellants are the victims, they're not the perpetrator. When we were in the federal court, the perpetrator, this insurance company, American Family, was saying, we don't have to cover this guy, our insured was the perpetrator. And that's the distinction between this case and the federal district court case. And once again, the trial court judge did not address that issue. I think that's it. Thank you. Thank you.
May it please the court, Peter Gregory on behalf of defendant appellee Allstate Insurance Company. There are three bases upon which to affirm the trial court's decision. The first one I'm going to start with is the issue preclusion argument. As the court is well aware, there are four elements to issue preclusion. First is identity of issue. Second is identity of parties. Third is final judgment. And fourth is full and fair opportunity to litigate.
Mr. Gregory, but State Farm wasn't a party to those other proceedings.
No, State Farm was not. Neither was Allstate, Your Honor,
okay.
Which is my client.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Allstate.
But the point is, you do not have to have identity of parties on both sides. You would for claim preclusion or res judicata, but for issue, it is only the party against whom the preclusion is sought that needs to be identical. And here,
counsel says trial court didn't deal with this.
That's correct
or incorrect?
That is absolutely correct. The trial court in this case mentioned the issue, decided that the court did not need to determine it, and because it was briefed, and went off on the Kastner argument. Now, as this court is well aware, any issue in support of the judgment of the trial court can be argued, and that's why I've raised the issue preclusion issue. So what we're dealing with here, there were various mentions of a federal court of appeals decision and a district court. It was simply a district court decision that never got appealed to the Tenth Circuit.
It's a different policy.
And it was the American Family policy, and I'm going to address that in a second. So, but in terms of the four elements, the identity of the parties, the plaintiffs in this case were defendants in the declaratory judgment action in the federal court, so there is that requisite identity. There was a final judgment. It went out on a summary judgment in the federal court. As the federal court opinion notes, the tortfeasor, Terlingen, did not even appear at all. So it was Rogan Eisenhower who actually litigated the federal court coverage decision. So they had a full and fair opportunity to litigate, which leaves us then with the first issue, which is identity of the issue. I accept what opposing counsel says. There is a distinction between third party and first party cases, but that's immaterial here for one very important reason. When we're dealing with the American Family policy, the coverage issue determined by the federal court was in part whether the tortfeasor was using his vehicle at the time of the incident. And the federal court determined under the Kastner analysis that the tortfeasor was not using his vehicle at the time of the incident. And the court also went to the second component of Kastner, which is the causal nexus. And the federal court said, moreover, there's no causal nexus. So for purposes of the liability coverage, which requires a use of the tortfeasor's vehicle, the federal court determined there was no use and there was no causal nexus. When we move over to the UM/UIM setting, which is what we're facing here, the claim against Allstate is, I think it's probably a UM claim. It was characterized as a UIM, but I think it's a UM claim. When we move into that setting, one of the specific elements that has to be proved is that the tortfeasor was using an uninsured motor vehicle. So the issue is, in fact, identical. It focuses on the tortfeasor's use of his or her vehicle.
Because UM and UIM coverage are statutorily mandated, wouldn't it be possible to come to a different conclusion, given the cases interpreting the statute, that UM, UIM coverage should be broadly interpreted, et cetera?
Well, I think that if we go to Kastner, Judge Webb, I think that what Kastner did was it actually created a distillation of the law that had developed up till that point in time, vis-a-vis use and vis-a-vis causal connection. And when we look at the specific facts of Kastner, Kastner dealt with the issue of whether there was coverage under both the PIP coverage of the policy as well as under the UM coverage of the policy. But the Supreme Court, in analyzing the use issue and the causal nexus issue, actually looked at all the cases that arose not only in the UM setting and not only in the PIP setting, but they also referenced liability cases like Cole. And the Supreme Court noted that the use test had matured over time, and ultimately the Supreme Court in Kastner, in determining the first component of its two-pronged test, said that in order to determine whether there's a use, you have to look at the nature of the vehicle, and when it's a non-commercial passenger vehicle, typically the only appropriate use is for transportation. And so in answer to your question, there isn't really a public policy or legislative intent distinction whether we're dealing with liability coverage and or UM. Indeed, as we know, UM coverage is meant to apply as if the tortfeasor had insurance. So the same kinds of public policies are in play in determining coverage under either type of policy.
Did Kastner cite Cole?
No, Kastner did not cite Cole, but what's and my Cole was K-O-H-L, and the Cole you're referencing is the C-O-L-E.
I apologize. You're right.
It did not. What's interesting about it, though, however, is when you go back to the Cole case, and I mean, I know, I practice in front of this court plenty, and we can't read a lot into cert denies, etc., but if you look at the Cole case, cert was denied, but two justices, in particular Corliss and Coates, would have granted cert on the use issues. What's interesting is that when Kastner comes along a year later, that opinion is actually written by Justice Corliss. So, no, it doesn't cite Cole, doesn't overrule Cole, but Kastner creates a whole new framework with which in within which to analyze the use and the causal connections issues. And that's why Cole is not controlling here. Kastner is.
Are you saying that, that Kastner effectively overruled Cole?
I would say it effectively did overrule it, particularly because if you look, and admittedly, the fact situations are somewhat different, but if you look at them, set them side by side, you do have what accounts to a criminal assault in Cole, and you have the sexual assault in Kastner, and you have what are markedly different end results reached.
What about Mr. Peters' point that that the impetus or motive for the assault in this case and in Cole arose from both parties using their vehicles, whereas the impetus for the sexual assault, I mean, whatever that might be, it certainly didn't have its genesis in the use of a motor vehicle. Why isn't that a difference?
A distinction with Kastner.
Right. Well, because when you look at how Kastner applies the two-pronged analysis, you kind of strip out the intent behind it, and you look more at the facts surrounding the continuum of actions. And so in Kastner, the first issue that the court went with or determined was there a use of the vehicle? And the court said, when you're dealing with a non-commercial passenger vehicle, the foreseeable or conceivable use is typically restricted to a means of transportation. The court distinguished or harmonized, if you will, Kung Law and I believe McMillan, because there the vehicles were in the process of moving at the time the assault took place. When you then go to the second prong of the Kastner analysis, which is the causal connection, the court noted, and this is one thing distinct from Mr. Peters' argument, it's no longer a simple but-for test. It's but-for plus. And if you look at Kastner, the court goes on to describe that simply proving or showing but-for the use of the vehicles this wouldn't happen is not sufficient. And at page 1264, the court says, the claimant must show that the use of the vehicle and the injury are directly related or inextricably linked so that no independent significant act or non-use of the vehicle interrupted the but-for causal chain between the covered use of the vehicle and the injury. Judge Webb asked the question, and the record doesn't show that there was any attempt by them to get away, and as Judge Fox points out,
they blocked the car.
He did.
He used his car as a quasi-weapon.
Well, but once again, if we go back to Kastner, it wasn't a truck, as in McMichael, which was designed to be used as a barricade. So his use of his use in quotations of his vehicle to block the car took it out of an appropriate use under the Kastner test because the vehicle was not being used for transportation purposes and it wasn't designed to be a barricade, as in McMichael.
Does the plaintiff here have an obligation to flee, which is contrary to our law with respect to assault?
Does he have an obligation to
leave the scene, leaving their car there?
Well, I don't
have a duty to.
Right, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, the point is the car was parked, so whether they could simply have walked away, there may be a distinction between walking away and fleeing. But I don't think that plays
out. I think you used the
word. Okay. But they could have left the. They
could have. Could have, but they had no obligation to.
Well, and I'm not saying that, but I'm saying from the analytical approach under Kastner, you've got to determine whether there is a use first and then whether there's a causal connection. And when we get to.
So using the vehicle to block their car is not, in your view.
That's correct, under the Kastner test.
Let me give you two hypotheticals. He pulls up behind the plaintiffs, sticks his hand out the window, and shoots one of them. That'd be use of the vehicle, correct, under the drive-by shooting cases?
I think that's correct.
Okay, so if he opens, if he, under your analysis, seems to me if he opens the door, takes one step, and then shoots him, the causal connection is broken.
Because he had left the vehicle.
Okay, isn't that kind of an artificial distinction, though, if you look at it from the perspective of the injured person and the motive for the assault?
I don't think it is an artificial distinction, and indeed, I mean, when we look at Kastner and what the Supreme Court said, Plaintiff Kastner, in that case, had invited the Supreme Court to turn the use and the causal connection issues into a fact question in each case. And the Supreme Court declined to do so and said it would invite different results in different cases so that some victims would recover and some would not. So what the Supreme Court was trying to do in Kastner was to provide some clarity to this area of assaults carried out with vehicles or involving vehicles. And so using your hypothetical, admittedly, it's a different result, but it's a result that is sanctioned by the Supreme Court through its ruling in Kastner and application of the two-prong test. So, I have about a minute left here. I do want to go back, and that is I cannot stress enough that at least I think the first analysis, the point that the court needs to go through is the issue preclusion, because this issue, in fact, was decided, and it is identical. And then, quite apart from the distinction that plaintiffs seek to draw, I think we do have to apply the Kastner two-pronged test. And when it's applied here, and keep in mind that in Kastner, one of the arguments was that the car was used to get to an isolated area to commit a crime, and that the seatbelt was used to keep the victim in the car while she was sexually assaulted. So there were components to the car that were actually a component of the assault. And the Supreme Court said, that's not enough. And so when we look at our facts, and your question, Judge Roy, about blocking the car in, the point is that's not enough to get us there under the Kastner rationale. There was no use here, and there was no requisite causal connection because there was an intervening act, the intervening act of Mr. Terlinguin getting out, removing the club, taking a swing, and when it broke, stabbing the plaintiff. Accordingly, we request that the judgment of the trial court be affirmed. Thank you.
Your Honors, I want to address some issues that were raised during the appellee's argument. Regarding the Cole case, the Court of Appeals Cole case, the Supreme Court was not satisfied with that. They knew about that case. They could have overturned it easy. They could have either accepted it and granted cert on the case when they had the opportunity to, or when they issued the decision in Kastner, they could have mentioned the fact that they were overturning Cole. They did neither of those things. As it states in Kastner, you have to look at the special fact pattern in each case. And in the case that closely resembles, the fact pattern of the case that closely resembles this case the most is the Cole case, where you got a vehicle blocking in another vehicle. You have two vehicles that are stopped, just like we had here. You have a vehicle where the assailant gets out of his vehicle, grabs his golf club. In the Cole case, he grabbed a beer bottle and then use that instrument to assault the parties. So what you have here is a fact pattern closely resolving Cole. Cole is still good law in this state until it's been overturned by somebody. And I would urge the court to follow the precedent set by Cole and find that Kastner does not overturn in any way Cole, or that the fact pattern in Kastner is dissimilar from the fact pattern here. Regarding the federal district court case, you have a different issue, as I pointed out before. You have a first-party claim versus a third-party claim, and that's what the trial court was focusing on in the federal court case, was whether or not there was third-party coverage. And there wasn't third-party coverage, and that was the correct ruling by the federal district court. However, in this case, under the statute, under an uninsured motor statute, the first-party were provided greater protections. In first-party cases, the Supreme Court has consistently struck down clauses in insurance policies which preclude recovery for intentional acts and criminal acts. They've upheld them in third-party cases, first-party cases, and they've struck them down. Another thing regarding a full and fair hearing, we didn't have that in a federal court case because it was granted. They filed a declaratory judgment. At the same time, they filed a motion for summary judgment before any discovery has been conducted on the case in a state court action. And we did not discover, or we didn't get the defendant's deposition. They hadn't taken the plaintiff's deposition regarding the fact pattern here, and that fact pattern was not in front of the federal district court case. Thank you very much.
Did in the federal court case, your clients were parties?
Yeah, they were brought in. They were named as defendants by American Family.
Did you file a 56F affidavit asking that the summary judgment decision be deferred until there was some discovery?
I did not file that affidavit. I'm not very familiar with federal court, but I did request that we have an opportunity to conduct discovery in the case, and that was not granted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank both counsel for the briefs and arguments. The case will be deemed submitted, and a written opinion will issue.